Blog Talk Radio.
Baby doll, we're clapping to life in the apocalypse. That's what we're clapping. You know what? That clap is going out to. Let me give it another one. Yeah. You know, and it's not just for, God bless the nurses and the doctors and, you know, the first responders and everybody who's, you know, working against their will, working in fear, working in situations that they are afraid are going to jeopardize their family. That's for the everyday person who is getting up and getting out and reassuring people in the neighborhood, reassuring their friends, checking in on their friends, checking in on the elderly, mm-hmm. checking in on the compromised. That's for everybody, because you know what? This is something that we've never seen before. God willing, we won't see again. Historically, we've seen it. But welcome to She's Raising the Bar Blog Talk Radio. And we're back. 8 years on the air. And
we should change
that too.
We all are raising the bar right now.
We all are raising the bar. That's exactly right, sweetie pie. We all are raising the bar. And we got a nice little shout out from Broadway World because, you know, in this pandemic,
cool.
we were out of our studio. And, you know, we've done this show for close to 8 years in a studio, and I love looking at my lovely co-host.
Blush, blush.
And I like knowing what's going on. And, you know, if anybody's done live radio, when your co-host is in front of you, it really makes all the difference because you get to know how they're breathing, when their facial response means they're going to say something.
Mm-hmm.
And you have facial cues, you have even just, you know, physical cues. I want to say something here. But Elite and I now are remote.
Yeah.
So we decided to keep the show going.
Right.
Okay. Absolutely. Howard Stern, the newscasters, yep.
everybody is doing remotely. And it's, you know, if we do step on each other's toes, we're sorry about that. But we just have no idea, you know, who's going to talk next. Because I've seen it. Everybody's doing it.
It really is. And it's tough.
That. Yeah.
And,
tough.
You know, I have a couple of people that were saying, you know, they're going to bring on a co-host for their podcast. And I said, listen, this is a very, very tender line that you cross, because you really have to know who you have to know each other, because if you're not seeing each other, it's really going to be chaos. It's going to be a head-on collision. So just make sure you know the people that you're bringing on. Now, Elite, my lovely co-host of 8 years, and I always used to say, sitting to my left and always close to my heart, the lovely Elite Ziegelman, but now I say, sitting a barrel apart across the bridge
mm-hmm.
is a lovely Elite Ziegelman. So that's
where is the clap?
I'm getting it. Hang on, sweetie pie.
See what happens when I can't control these?
Well, you can't control everything else, sweetheart. There you go. Was that enough for you or no?
Well,
now go ahead.
Sitting to my left, because that's the way the bridge is to me, is the lovely Lori Towers.
Woohoo!
Oh, for some reason, yours is louder.
You know what? I just moved myself closer to the mic. That's all it was.
There was no reason.
There was no reason. Nothing was intended, my love.
Okay.
Nothing was intended, trust me. And, you know what? Again, we're just so privileged to be able to do this remote.
Be healthy. That's the privilege.
Yeah. You're doing it in your house. I'm doing it with lovebirds and parakeets behind my head. 3 cats. You got 2 cats.
Yeah, I got my
Ollie. And here we are.
Next to me. And I'm watching the buds on the tree budding, which is beautiful.
You know, this is what I've been saying to people, and I know I could be annoying with my optimistic look on things, but yeah, there's a lot of stuff that we're looking at that could be negative, and believe me, I agree. But you also have to look at the beauty of spring and understand that it's still there. And regardless of what's going on,
because the humans are the ones that carry around negative energy, and just stare in the eye of nature every day, you will never, ever feel negative, because there's nothing negative about it. Just watching the beauty of animals and the trees growing and the beauty of the skies, it's just gorgeous. There's just no negativity there at all. So that's what I concentrate on every day to get me through this.
And, you know, the truth is, again, you know, we have the power of reason, which I think it's a gift in a strange package. We understand the magnitude of what's happening and the consequence of what's happening, and so we're afraid of it. But animals just go day to day, and they love us, and we love them, and as long as we feed them and give them the insulation they need, whether it's food, whether it's nutrition or love, they're good. So this is all, I think, a gift in a very ugly package, because I think that we needed a reset button. Maybe not this, but I think we needed to look at the values of the little things. Who really matters?
Big lesson we're getting taught. Yeah, we're getting taught a very big lesson, and for a reason. And, you know, hopefully, you know, we all come out of this, you know, thinking differently about things and each other. And hopefully, you know, a lot will come out, you know, a better person. You know, I'm going to go back to the fitness days that we always spoke about, where, because I've been taking a class, I told you, about the pursuit of happiness. And the thing about us is the discipline that we have every day of exercise, eating right, and if you have the discipline of doing all that, you have the discipline of living every day the way you need to, because you're so disciplined. People that are not disciplined in their eating habits or their exercise habits or taking care of themselves in general are really going to fall apart, because they don't know where to start with this. And
I agree.
It's just, and it's also, you know, a discipline of being happy, because that's what's making us happy, is to do our everyday, you know, routines the way we did before all this happened. And I've been working out every day. I've been going out
Me
and walking,
too.
You know, thank God for my photography. I went yesterday for two walks.
Yep.
And
do it.
It just makes me happy, you know, and that's where I'm going to stick to. I'm going to hold on to that. And it's just going to be more enhanced when this is all over, because I got through it. And that should make you happy that you got through it. And the discipline of just being who I am during all this, you know. Don't let this change you. Just let it change your way of thinking, because the way of thinking is so important right now, because you can't let this get you down. There's no way.
And, you know, I think in terms of, you know, and again, I'm not going to be preaching, because these are the times that try men's souls. And I don't want to be preachy and say, don't drink, don't do this, don't do that, because, you know, that's asking a lot of people. They're in quarantine. They might be battling depression. Look, do whatever you have to do to make yourself feel better, but don't forget about the physicality of you. Don't forget that you need to keep your body strong in all this. Don't forget you need to do something, a routine, groom yourself, because I know a lot of people that are falling into disrepair, and they're not showering, they're not getting ready.
They're not shaving, they're not doing a lot of
things.
That's
exactly right.
They think it's their time to just let themselves go, and you know what's going to happen at the end of it? They're really going to suffer, because they're not going to go back into their normal ways again.
Or it could be some features of depression. And look, this is going to have a lot of roots. This is going to have a lot of branches. There are going to be a lot of people that are not going to bounce back from this. And therefore, for the grace of God, I always say, I'm fortunate. You know, you're fortunate. Knock wood. The high holy days that are coming, we were okay. But there are a lot of people that are not going to fare well in this, and these are the people that we need to reach out to and try to bring them out of whatever frame of depression they're in. And if we can't do that, you know, there are resources that can help, because this is a lot, and it's not, you know what, this is a marathon. It's not over. And everybody
well,
who
people
was...
Had, right. Well, those, I'm sorry again. See, this is what we were talking about. It's just
this is fine,
they
honey.
Had the components of depression to begin with, and it's just going to escalate downhill from here. That's all it is.
Well, you know, you and I always talk about how everybody, you know, in the beginning was, because it's almost like a novelty, rah, 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 we're going to get through this. Yes, 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 we're going to fight this. And as time wears on, it's only natural that people start falling by the wayside, and people start getting exhausted, and people start getting, you know, falling into a negative area. That's only normal. And I'm not making it, it's only normal. So historically, what we've done is the stronger carry the weak, and you know what? It'll flip over. You know, I always say, I'll carry you for now. If I need you, hopefully you're there. It's not a judgment. So that's what we're dealing with now. And hopefully nobody is too hard on themselves. And if you find yourself in a place where you think it's going to go to a place that's darker than you'd normally like, there are so many hotlines and so many people that you could call if you can't feel that you want to reach out to a close friend or a relation.
I mean, there's doctors that are doing, you know, therapists that are online that you could contact with. There's a lot of resources to get to, a lot. So reach out if
and
you
this
need
it. And that's the whole thing. Don't let your ego lead this. You know, ego leads too much in society. Don't be afraid to say, you know what, I'm having a problem here. So that's really it. But what we're talking about today is art in the apocalypse. Now, this has happened before. This has happened before. And when you think about the quarantine of, and my dates might be off, the Black Plague, I think, was 1606 to 1607. I could be wrong. But I think about the things that happened there within the arts, how people who are writers, people, painters, just use the time well, as horrible as it was. I think Shakespeare did King Lear, Macbeth, I'm thinking also Antony and Cleopatra. All of these were written during the quarantine of the Black Plague. So stuff happens that could be wonderful within all this. And I think that's our
especially
show today.
If you're if you're creative
exactly
in writing,
right.
in you know painting, you know photography, you become so creative now because you
Anything.
Have the time. Time is on your side right now, so take advantage of it. Really take advantage
of it. You know Puma Pearl, and as do I, and she's a celebrated writer and poet. And she actually has, and I think I told you, I shared something that she wrote a couple of weeks ago in the apocalypse that I read it and I remained and I just sat there because it resonated not only to me, because, you know, I think we're all narcissistic. We all have to find ourselves in something. But this, I think, resonated with pretty much everyone. And now she actually has a weekly column in ChelseaCommunityNews.com. And it's called Writing. And I love this. It's beautiful. Writing the Apocalypse.
Sure.
And I think that this is just what we need now. Because you know what? It's edgy. It could be angry. It could be hopeful. It's every layer of what we're experiencing now. And it's honest. And I think that the arts community has to rise within all this and figure out how they're going to get their message across, whether it's music, whether it's spoken word, how they're going to do it, because we definitely need it. We definitely need it now.
No, I agree. I totally agree.
Is she on?
She
board
is
with
on.
That?
I'm going to bring her on and let her bless
I can't
us with
sing.
Her words.
Yes.
Puma. Welcome. Welcome, Puma.
Yes,
Puma
I'm here.
Pearl,
okay.
How are you, darling?
How are you?
I'm doing okay. I was listening to you guys, and I'm listening only on the phone, so there won't be feedback.
That's fine.
Because things are probably
delayed,
right?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Right? Okay.
Well, that's
all right.
That's perfect. And you're nice and clear.
Nice
so
and
that's
clear,
perfect.
Yes.
We're not getting any static. First, and this is always the icebreaker question, and this is what I've been saying to people. In the holiday parties in 6 months, when we will be doing these holiday parties again, we'll be social. The opening icebreaker is going to be, how were you in all this? How are you doing?
I am doing, in this very moment,
mm-hmm.
I'm doing okay. I'm doing okay all of the time, and the basic
mm-hmm.
facts of my situation. I have shelter.
Yeah.
I have a place to live.
Yeah.
I'm going to pay my maintenance today, which is very cheap. I'm not sick.
Mm-hmm.
My family has come through being sick with this virus, and they're alive, and the dog is
breathing
right now. If you ask me how I was doing yesterday at about this time, I was having a terrible panic attack to the extent that I I'm not used to panic attacks. I've only had like 3 or 4 in my life. And I couldn't even tell the difference between a panic attack and not being able to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
So like
oh,
later
boy.
I laughed
mm-hmm.
at it like I was like Fred Sanford, I'm coming, Margaret. But at that moment... You know, at that moment, everything was closing in. I was hot. I was dizzy. I couldn't breathe. I was coughing, and I could just relate to anybody terrified of being sick in that moment. So, you know, I was listening to what you ladies were talking about, and I have to say I agree, and I don't agree. You know
okay.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I agree with the fact that a lot of us will come out so much better. I don't agree
mm-hmm.
that people who don't have the same resources as others will necessarily
mm-hmm.
fall apart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
this is a minute at a time kind of thing, an hour at a time, a day at a time, and there's so much disenfranchised in the society
mm-hmm.
we live in. You know, whether you have access to health care, like it's making me crazy when I hear people say, "Oh, just call your doctor."
Mm-mm.
You know,
now there's a level
of healthcare where that's a fantasy.
Right, exactly.
You know, when I look at, let's say, the priority of needs, going back to social work with Maslow, I know, I'm getting related
mm-hmm.
to tarot here,
but
it's very hard to, like, start being creative and positive and saying om and meditating if your ability to live is threatened, if you're in a situation
yeah.
where the housing is inadequate, where you have
mm-hmm.
to get
yeah.
food,
yeah.
where you're fearful because you know that you're not going to get medical care if you need it, and you know,
right.
so the, you know,
right.
the equalizer is that anyone can get infected, but once you get infected, there is no equality.
Yeah.
Exactly. And, you
yeah.
know, they had the I was watching, and again, I watched the news just to get the resource, but again,
right.
it could be very depressing, so I want to keep.
Yeah.
But the non-white community, there is the escalation in, and again, any underserved community is not going to do well. Why? Because there's lack of medical care, lack of information. So
mm-hmm.
this is pretty much how it's going to happen. And, you know, when I was watching, you're heart sick, but of course this is exactly how it was going to go. Of course.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? There's another angle to that.
Mm-hmm.
I live in an extremely low-income community in zip code 1002 with an extremely
mm-hmm.
low chance of contracting the virus. Why? Because there's a high level of unemployment. Because people are very insular, we're far from transportation, we're in the very southern eastern part of Manhattan, where you're like 3/4 of a mile from the subway, where people do not have the money to travel, to go to other places, international travel. Nobody visits here, there's nothing here.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lower level of infection. So, you know, there's so many ways of this thing is so complicated.
Right.
It's
exactly.
Not a lot.
It's not a simple way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? The complexity of this, I mean, again, we might stabilize in 6 months, but there is going to be so many branches to this for years to come, I think. And your point, Puma, I think is a good one, because I didn't look at it from that level. But, yeah, of course, that makes absolute perfect sense.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, you know, the reason I really looked into this was, you know, the 7 p.m. clap. We don't have much of the 7 p.m. clock down where I am. So I've been out there every night at 7 p.m. hanging out my window, banging a pot. And like maybe two people have joined me, and I'm here saying, why are we not participating? And then I realized there's a whole area of people whose lives are so insular that they are not being affected in the ways other people are being affected. And that's why it's not happening right here, because sometimes in certain ways the definition of a certain type, and I'm not saying it's a poverty of the spirit, it's a great neighborhood, it's a great place to live despite a low income, but sometimes when poorer communities are isolated, they take on their own culture.
True. Yeah, of course.
Like the whole building may be your life. Your whole project may be your life. You know, so so I kind of figured out that that's got to be what's happening. But I'm still going to be at my window at 7 p.m. by myself if I have to, you know.
And you know, you mentioned something to me, because you and I were going back and forth on Facebook, Puma. And you know what? Nobody in my neighborhood is with a pan at 7 o'clock, but I'm going to be out on my porch, and I'm going to be the one, and that's it. And you know, if I'm the only one there, that's okay. That's okay. Maybe tomorrow with somebody else.
I was the only one here for a week, and then one night I saw two hands clapping, and I was, like, so excited, you know?
Yeah. Well, you started it. Listen, there's got to be one person that starts the whole, you know, party, and that's what you did.
Well, you know what's funny? This is because I'm watching friends from all over, and there's this wonderful groundswell, and you hear it. If you're on Facebook, you hear this roar. That is amazing. That God bless the nurses and the doctors, you know, because that, if nothing else, gives them adrenaline walking home after a 12-hour shift, that probably gives them a little shot in the arm.
Right.
But then you look at other neighbors.
Yeah, people who know what's happening. Absolutely.
Exactly. And then when Puma said, you know, stay in your neighborhood and take the pot. So, you know what? I got a pot on my stove and a wooden spoon, and I'm going out at 7 o'clock. And that's it.
Yeah, me too.
You know what? And people, you don't have to be in New York to do it. You can support us. You can be banging a fucking spoon wherever you are. And it's just, you know? So it is a groundswell, and it is a great movement. And, you know, for the first week of it, I felt kind of like, you know, left out. I did walk up to Grand Street once, and I'm like, oh, man, this is so good. They're playing New York, and people are blowing horns. And I'm like, fuck, like, I'm missing this. And then I'm like, you know what?
Yeah.
You make your own. Whatever you have, you make it, you know?
Right,
I think that's
right.
I think you're absolutely right with that. I mean, again, you want to serve your community. Again, you know, at this point, I think the only beauty in this is it's just us, and us is everybody. And if I talk to somebody in Ireland now and say to them, how are you doing? They understand exactly what I'm talking about. So
it's creating
this us that I hope could last. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, we can only hope for the best.
But Puma, tell us about your column every week, which I've been loving, incidentally. And the first one, in the apocalypse, I was telling Lee before, and I told John before he read it, this made me stop in my tracks. And I think that was the first one that was posted. Am I wrong?
That was the first one that was posted. Well, Tulsa Community News is a site created by my former Villager editor, Scott Stifler, and I freelance there now. I used to write for the Villager. I when I got an idea, I said, Scott, how about publishing a poem of mine every week? You don't have to pay me. This is something we're doing together, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, Well, actually, the first time I said, would you like a poem this week? And then it got such – it was in the apocalypse, and it got such a great response. That's when I suggested we kind of ground it with a name, and we do it every week. Because, you know, I always just kid around and say, like, my survival skills in the apocalypse, what the fuck are they going to be, a poem? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, a poem's
yeah,
not going to
yeah,
kill
yeah.
zombies. But anything we do, anything like we do for each other that resonates, that identifies,
yeah.
you know, whether you're living alone or you're living with others, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
We're just because you're living alone doesn't mean you're doing it alone.
Right.
No, exactly. That's exactly right.
It's a way of doing it, you know?
And it's, you
so
know,
anyway,
it's really hard because.
Yeah.
Read it now. Please read that first one now.
Oh,
read as many
yeah,
as you want.
Okay.
Please.
All right, because you know, I've noticed when I put these poems together that I've written how much they've changed from the first one I wrote about this on March 16th.
Really? Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and In the Apocalypse was one of the earlier ones written on March 23rd. So, okay, so this is it. In the Apocalypse. It's the apocalypse. Men fall in love with their wives, and their wives call their mothers and check on the kids, and the men bake bread, and the women paint the ceiling. Partners live in houses and watch together, or alone on different floors, and they talk about what to eat even more than ever before, and they bicker about pizza and the safety of fried rice. Or they live in apartments, or in studios, or in basements, and they take walks in the park. Or one of them is depressed and one is hopeful because they've learned to take turns. Or they haven't learned to take turns, and the hopeful one hates the depressed one, and vice versa. Or they were about to break up, and now they're stuck together. Or they decided to cohabit, and it's a wonderful baby you and me against the world kind of thing going on. Or it's a terrible mistake, and there's no way to go. Or you live alone. And it's not that different from your former life, or it's very different from your former life. But at least you know how to do it, and you're never bored, or you're always bored because you never knew how to be home. You eat too much, you eat too little, and you can't get in too much trouble, but maybe you can get into a little trouble. But you never drive drunk and always practice safer sex. You prepared for the apocalypse by buying eye makeup remover, hair dye, and 5 red lipsticks, which you carefully apply before you get the mail or do the laundry. You miss the dog more than you miss most people and only become fearful when your son's throat hurts and your daughter panics over your son. And you love from afar, which you often did anyway. The lives we are living are the lives that we made. Only the sheltered can shelter and Zoom and stream and text and post photos of food on social media. The lives and ruins are not yet found until everyone falls in love with the earth and the air and themselves and each other. End poem. Okay. This next one is actually the very first one I wrote. Yeah, you want to say something before I go on?
Oh, I love that last
See,
one.
This is did you, Ali? Did you see what I'm saying about that?
Oh,
that
yeah,
made, when I read
really
that, it's just yeah, because it really is everything, and it is just and again, art is subjective, but this is just so relatable. I think from any walk of life, any income, it hits you where it's supposed to, in the heart and in the soul, and understanding and being empathetic and sympathetic. Beautiful. I love that.
It's amazing.
Thank you. Okay.
Bravo.
So this one, like I said, it's the first one I wrote. It was written on March 16th, so I had only been in for a day or two at that point. And it's called, is it distance or is it Monday? The kitchen faucet slowly leaks, one droplet every 10 minutes. Sometimes I catch it in the act. In the morning, the chrome basin is wet and ugly, as neglected as the broken shade, the yellowed walls. My purple checkered pillowcases pretending they are curtains. I pretend it's not loneliness. It's only Tuesday. I don't know how to hang shades or replace washers, and I pay rapt attention to the water. Will it turn into a deluge? Will the sun burn through the window? Will the faucet keep leaking? I don't worry about getting sick. I worry about the toilet flushing, the elevator running, the color of the dog's pee, the air conditioner in the closet, the planet shrinking, my world in my room, everything I own in a coffee cup. I worry about coffee and the leaky faucet. It isn't loneliness. It's Wednesday. We're still on the grid. I sneaked up on the sink and it was dry or just kidding. Pillowcases float in the breeze. I have some chicken left, and there is peanut butter and one green apple and frozen mangoes, shelves filled with books, and there are friends on the phone, and there's always music. It's not anxiety. It's only Thursday. So far, we have just 12 Fridays to go until maybe we meet on a Saturday, and I'm not afraid. It's only Sunday.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I actually like that one better than the other one.
You know what? I mean,
I really do.
All right.
But you know, you think about what everybody's going through, and I'm not elite. You've been at my gigs and so on, and musicians and artists and you just know the what it means to be able to be at a venue. And, you know, translate your art, whether it's spoken word, whether it's a musician, and you just can't do that. So you're trapped and you always feel stunted.
We're doing what we can. I mean,
right.
Absolutely.
Ways. Like we're doing this and that. Like I got to do a Zoom thing online. So I'm not thrilled about doing a Zoom thing. I'm going to do it once because I was invited. But people really are. I handling this in whatever way we can. Like, I don't know, Joseph Tabnick's listening in. He's been doing these great live streams.
Hey, Joe. Yep.
Hi, Joe. And when I see him in the basement and I see so many of our friends who are all cross-talking, talking to each other, it's a way. It's a way that we're getting together, and it's a way that we're preparing. Because this shit's not happening like the way it used to so fast, if ever. It's going to be gradual in being able to get together and do some things. And I believe it will start with maybe 2 or 3 people can get together. So maybe we do a show in Joe's basement, and maybe we'll figure a way to do something outside. But we're not having that big party anytime soon, realistically.
We have to rebuild before anything. A lot of rebuilding to happen soon.
Well, not right now. Yeah, not right now.
No, I'm saying, you know, that has to happen first.
It's going to be a gradual way of coming out of sometimes I call it captivity, but it's going to be,
gradual
the world.
We'll gather,
and,
you know.
Yeah, and it's going to be weird.
Yeah, it is going to be very weird.
But you know what's interesting? And 2 weeks before all this happened, I remember talking to a few people, and Lee, you were in that group. Social media was just horrible. It's like it's ruining people, and people don't know how to talk to each other. People don't know how to connect. People don't know the color of their friends' eyes. Mm-hmm. And now social media has been redeemed because it's the only
way of communicating.
It's a tie that binds. It really is. So at least now, if you don't want to do Zoom, you could do FaceTime. You could do something to get your voice across or to see your friend's face. So it's just amazing how something we hated under a month ago, we're now applauding and singing its praises and thankful it's there. It's crazy.
But it's really crazy.
It's
so funny, though, because, you know, as much as I still hate social media, I mean, I love social media. It's get your product out. It does a lot of positive stuff. But the negative people will still be negative on social media, and they're still negative.
Well, that's of course.
Okay?
Yeah, of course.
It's just that's got to stop. Negativity's got to stop, and it's just society.
Well, you know what? It's not going to stop. Negativity's not going to stop any more than the character defect is going to stop.
I totally know that, but it's
it all depends on – look, I used to be in recovery, right? I used to go to meetings, and we had, a little expression that maybe is not in the 12-step text, but we used to say, you know what, scumbag out there, scumbag in here. You know,
mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that's
getting,
real.
You know,
yeah.
you get clean, and you are who you are, and you work on who you are. You know, and we mm-hmm. get through this, and some people are going to come out to be really, really better people, and some are going to just go really deep into their own character defects. And the bottom line is, some are not going to make it, and that's what
exactly.
You know, that's what we
exactly.
forget about talking when we talk about luxury is really. Like being able to make art and go on social media and do all that shit,
yeah.
it's such a fucking luxury, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Right now.
It really
everything
is.
We have is a luxury.
Definitely.
Exactly. You know, and I saw a very interesting post this morning because, I mean, you know, we started off, you know, supporting each other. We bolster each other. And then as time goes on, we start wearing down. And you could see the wear in other people. And again, this is not a judgment. It's just this is what naturally happens.
Uh-huh.
So I've been seeing a lot of hate mongering on social media. Oh, well, this person was in any type of paint store, and they're buying a can of paint. Do they really need that? Is it essential? This person was out buying tools. Do they really need that? Is that essential? And the post was, you never know what's keeping somebody from slipping in sobriety in this. If somebody is going out and buying a can of paint because it's making them feel less alone, more productive, and holding on to any sobriety or staying away from any trigger. God
right.
bless
swaying
them, don't
away
judge
from
them.
What, right, right, exactly.
Right.
They're swaying away
who
from
am
whatever
I to
that
say,
triggered them.
You don't need... But that's the whole thing. Who am I to say you don't need a can of paint? Who am I to say you don't need to go do what you have to do to get through this and be
right.
safe, and that's it. And I just
and keep
love
your judgment
that because,
to yourself. That's it.
Well, that's the whole
thing.
Keep
your judgment,
what,
this is
where I'm saying we could become this bucket of crabs crawling over each other to get
mm-hmm.
out. But we have to, you know, exercise compassion, empathy, sympathy, because I don't know your story. And
right.
I just do what you have to do to make yourself safe, keep your family safe. God bless you. And I was so
we
happy to see that.
We only walk in each other in our own shoes. We don't walk in anybody
that's
else's
shoes.
That's
what I'm
shoes.
Saying. So I was happy to see
well,
that because
you know,
I've been seeing
I
so much.
As first, do no harm. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know,
exactly.
If I am aware of behavior, if I talk to friends who are doing certain things that are not the right, there's my stating that is not being judgmental. It's my saying that.
Right.
You
exactly.
know what I mean?
Exactly.
And I've been judged for being so-called judgmental. You know,
mm-hmm.
like how come the one who points that out, it's okay to judge them. But if you're saying, hey, you know, maybe you shouldn't be doing these things just because you feel like it, you know?
Right. That's right.
Then
right.
Sudden,
exactly.
Then all of a sudden that's a crime. So, you know, I've never engaged really in this battling and this squabbling on Facebook. I've always felt that was like, you know, just a total waste of time.
Me
but
too.
Every now and then, if I see something, I'm going to say what I say. And if you don't like it, well, you know, there are so many.
Well, it's your opinion. If they
about,
put
you
something
know?
Up, you have every right to comment, especially if you're friends with the person. You have every
oh,
right
of course,
to comment.
That's different.
Well, if I'm friends with the person, I'd rather talk to them one-on-one most of the time. It's just sometimes
well,
you're
just saying
you're
in general.
You're hit in the face with something that you feel like you have to say something publicly about. Like no,
right.
this is
yeah.
not okay. Like, no, it's not okay to have a secret jam session. No, it's not okay to find a place for your band to rehearse. Like, different things I've heard about
mm-hmm.
not only here, but
mm-hmm.
in other parts of the country. And you can
oh, yeah.
say publicly,
mm-hmm.
no, that's not okay.
Right.
No,
that's
no, that's exactly right. Well, that's for their own safety. That's
right,
not even
exactly.
Judgmental.
That's what you're doing. You're watching
it's
out for their safety.
From a right, it's coming from a loving place. So, but there are people that may stand online. And again, I was never one to be on Facebook saying, I'm online in Home Depot. I don't do that.
No,
I'm
no.
here. I never do that. My, you know, I'm private.
Right.
I just don't put my life out there. But there are people saying and taking pictures of people buying paint or doing whatever. It's like, listen, you don't know what they're doing. You don't know their lives. But when you know their lives and you're doing it because of it's a humanitarian import, that's a different story, totally different.
Agreed.
So that's where I
you
think.
Know, you know,
yeah.
there's the positive side of these tools and there's the negative side. And all
okay.
we can really do is try to winds up more on the positive side. Everybody's going to have their negative moments. You know,
it's human nature, and it's easier to be negative than it is positive. Much easier.
Yeah,
I think so too.
Really stressful times, and these are traumatic times. And there's the idea of cumulative grieving, where if you lose us people, you never can even get through all those stages, like denial and all, and bargaining, go through the whole thing because you're losing another one. Because those of us who have lived through the HIV and AIDS pandemic, we already know this.
Yeah.
We've already been there. It's just that it was so clear how you could change your behavior during that pandemic, and you could be near the dying person. You could love the dying person. You can hug their family.
Yeah.
The separation
of
not being able to unite with the people who need you, that's part of the worst part, that this is happening. It's just
the
part,
human touch. The human touch is something we need. We need.
That's the stuff that's important. Not taking a picture of somebody who bought a can of paint, but if that's what they want to do, fuck them. I'm glad I'm not you.
Right.
That's how I look at it.
Exactly. Yeah. And, I think of in all this, I'm just trying to think of people that, I mean, writers that I admire. And the two people I was thinking of, and it's a complete spectrum here. I was thinking of Tale of Two Cities. It was The Best of Times, The Worst of Times, Charles Dickens. And then I think, I love Rod Serling. I am such a huge fan of Rod Serling. Any Twilight Zone marathon, I'm there. I don't go out of the house. He was a genius as far as I'm concerned. And I think of The Night of the Meek. If you're familiar with that particular episode with Aud Carney, it's just the meek inherit the earth. And I'm kind of thinking weird way, the Kardashians are not going to be celebrated. It's going to be the essential work. It's going to be we glamorize the worst possible components of ourselves. We glamorize the rich and the famous. So again, if you're born into money and you didn't earn it, I don't really have that much respect. That's just my opinion. But we're celebrating the people that are out there, the essential workers, the people in the stores, the janitors, the techs, the nurses, the nurse techs, the doctors, of course, the bus drivers. These are the people that, again, you pass by, you look over, you don't give them much kudos. And maybe now we might take a turn and look, wow, they are the fiber of society, not the lifestyles of the rich and the famous or the housewives.
Mm-hmm.
Could be.
Well, I know what
Could
I do.
Be.
Every contact I have with an essential worker, I thank them for working.
There you
I
go.
Thank
Good for
my
you.
Mailman this morning. I thank my maintenance man. My maintenance man, the building staff, every time I see them. You know what I mean? We just keep thanking people for their service. And if I had money, I'd be tipping everybody. But because they're all. I mean, people aren't thinking about some of this. Like people who work maintenance, supers in buildings, they're showing up every single day, but they're not making even a quarter of their income because they can't do repairs and get tips,
Mm-hmm.
So,
That's exactly
even if
right.
If you have a job, you're not making what you should be making,
And compromising your family. I mean, and a lot of people have elderly parents that they have to worry about. I mean, I know my mother-in-law lives upstairs from me. She's 85 years old, so I have to worry about when I get groceries from her. I make sure I take my shirt, my clothes off, and I redress, and I wash my hands, and I bring it up to her because she's got COPD.
Such a drill. It takes Lauren to pull it tough away.
My dry skin.
Go to the store, right?
Yeah.
my dry skin is brutal now. It's so bad
with the
washing.
But now can you imagine being a nurse in ED and in the emergency department, and you have kids at home who nobody wants to babysit for you at this point because you're a nurse and you're exposed. And then you have elderly parents, which most of us do. Right. It's horrible. It's a world that's against you, and you have to worry about everything, but yet you show up for work every day. So
yeah,
God bless.
They're completely heroic, and they're showing up with a smile. You know what I mean? You know, and like we have a security guard here at night, like just from 4 to 12. He probably makes minimum wage. He travels all, travels from way out in Brooklyn. He has to sit there in his fucking mask. You know how uncomfortable that is. His mask and his gloves for his 8 or 9 hour shift, and the guy is always smiling underneath the mask when he
sees
him.
God bless him.
You know.
God bless him. Yeah.
And we see a lot of that, and it's completely heroic of people. You know, I'm saving money to be able to give all these guys a really nice Christmas gift.
Amen.
If I can.
Yeah.
I don't know where
I'm
saving money
mm-hmm.
from. I don't have any money either, but I figure, at some point, it's the money I'm not spending on doing my hair, which I'm obsessed about,
Yeah,
but
then
you got the other side of the coin also, that all these other people that are, they're not essential workers, but they did have high-paying jobs or jobs in general.
Like my hairdresser, Joey, who's probably not listening, but Joey deserves all his customers to send him some extra tips. I'm sending him something today.
I feel more for them than anybody else, at least these nurses and the doctors. They're still getting paid. They still have a job to go to. But these other
their lives are on the line. So it's not even a matter of feeling more for this one than that one. It's just an empathy. It's just learning an empathy. Just like you said, you don't know why the guy bought the can of paint. It's having an empathy for every human life, every kind of life. Because my friend Linda, who I'm in a poetry group with, I don't know if Linda Rizzo's listening, but she wrote this beautiful poem about being so sad about seeing the squirrels leaving Central Park, wondering why there's no one feeding them. Every aspect of life, every human thing is affected in this pandemic. My dog, she goes out, she cannot figure out why no one's coming up to her and petting her.
And she's such a sweetie.
Every single living thing is affected by this. And some people might be not showing the best side of their character. Some people have a shitty character, and that may not change, But, if you're a sociopath, you're not going to become a nice person because of some little
absolutely
pandemic.
Absolutely
not.
This is not going to be character changing. Well, what's interesting? we're all peddlers
Every situation, everything we come across is an opportunity to change or an opportunity to
absolutely
save change.
Yep.
It's not what happens. It's how we cope with it. And I hope I'm not contradicting myself, because I still believe some people just have different tools and some people are just more privileged than others.
No, you're not.
During Hurricane Katrina, when everyone was in the stadium, the first people I was thinking of were the methadone addicts who could not get their meds on, and the schizophrenics who were off their meds, and the people who were so sick, and all of the mentally ill people who were how the fuck are they taking it? So when we talk about dealing with anxiety and being positive, if you have an anxiety disorder and you're going through this, that's this times a thousand times for you,
Okay, here's a good question, not to cut you off, Puma. What are we doing with the poor homeless that obviously they're compromised and possibly infected? Are we actually going to reach out and try to do something? Because it's almost like the 600-pound elephant in the room. What about the homeless in all this?
Well,
there's no health care on the
street. There are teams of other essential workers who are total heroes. Homeless outreach teams are still out there in the street. I know they put a bunch of beds together, I think, on Roosevelt Island, and they also put 500 beds aside, I believe, for people who are homeless who test positive. But obviously we do not have an adequate answer to this.
I
haven't seen any change in my neighborhood in that area. So, I don't know. When we say, what are we doing? Well, what did they do with homeless people with AIDS? Basically let them die in the street.
That's right.
The community started housing programs, because I worked for the first supportive housing program that was in existence for people living with AIDS. We started the same time as Housing Works started, and I was doing intake to hospital beds, and I was getting apartments for people who never even lived the 3 days to move into them.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, I've already seen this, you know?
Yeah, you've been through it.
And I don't expect much different from the society in a lot. Maybe it's a little different. I don't know.
I'm going to call you a war veteran.
Well, you know, the truth is, when the whole AIDS thing, and I'm not going to get too political, but this specific...
Why not? Get us political.
Well, I'm going to say, I wasn't a fan of Reagan, although it's better than what we have now. But the thing is, his dismissal of this is because it was a specific identification. It was homosexual. So he was very easy to look the other way. Now, this is different because this is everybody. This is just everybody. So there is no reason for us to say, pull in everybody. It's not gender specific. It's not preference specific. Let's figure out how we're going to get people well. Again, you can't force anybody to go in a program. And believe me, I know. I've been there. You can't do that. But we actually have to figure out a way that is flexible and getting people into care. And that's what we should be concentrating on, because that's the next step. Because if we think we have it solved now, we really don't, because we're missing 20% of the population. Mm-hmm. That's really
it. There's nothing solved. I mean, I would say figure out exactly what this virus is about and the measures that can be taken, you know, towards testing everybody to find out who has antibodies. Because there's a million people who've been exposed and don't know they were exposed, because people react to situations in different ways. Mm-hmm. So I would say in this case, dealing with the virus itself is a priority, because with HIV and AIDS, once it was understood how it worked, prevention was very easy. You know, it was very easy to accomplish once you knew what you were doing. It wasn't that hard. Like when they finally allowed needle exchange programs, the transmission rate between IV drug users went down to almost zero.
Right.
You know, because it was preventable. Mm-hmm. We don't know how to prevent this, or you know what I mean. So science, it really has to take the lead here. And as far as the social programs, what can we do without knowing what this whole thing looks like? We don't know.
Well, supposedly it all came from a dry market in China. I mean, I mean,
where we're standing right now, we can know.
No,
where it came
from, but... I mean, we need antibodies for this, but we need to stop a lot of things in this world, because a lot of things are not regulated. And it just transfers into the United States, because supposedly if you eat like a dead bird or a live bird that has diseases in it, it's going to happen. And that's what happened with this. Supposedly, is it true that it came from a dead bat, that people ate a bat and this is how it started?
I think that's an urban legend. That the bat virus jumps onto someone else. I mean,
Right. I mean, but, you can't believe everything you read, but I mean... I don't know. I really don't know. It's very confusing, but we do need an antidote, and we need to know where it came from, because I think this is, again, a lesson that we're getting taught very hard. So,
Well, you know, again, we need something, but it needs to get to everybody, not just a certain select group. I mean, we need to make everybody, not just the people of privilege. We need to make sure everybody gets this or gets into some sort of care. And I got to be honest with you, I don't see it happening. I don't see, the curve might flatten a little bit, but I don't see things coming back to normal till maybe August. I mean, we'll have flexible, you know, the restrictions will be lifted, I'm sure. But life as we know it probably won't fall into step with it for a while.
No,
so
for at least this whole year.
Well,
I personally
don't think life as we know it is coming back. I think there has to be a major change in how we do things, you know, but I wouldn't suggest in a month that things are even normal, because there's going to be a different normal.
Yes, you know? Definitely.
I think this is a very interesting social experiment that we inherited. We didn't want this, but we inherited this. So it's how we use this. And I think I'm always an optimist. I think we can do something that is of great wealth with this, or we could choose not to. So I think a lot of it is, you know, again, the powers that be, and I'm not in favor of any anybody we have in place now, but the best we could do is the best that we can do. And I think that's all it comes down to. And Puma, before you leave us, I want to get a couple more of your readings in, if you can. Do you have a couple more?
Yeah, I'll do that right now. How much time do I have?
We have about 5 minutes. It's fine.
Yeah, 5 minutes.
Okay, so I'll read this one.
I'm looking at the board.
Because we were talking about, or I was talking about the HIV pandemic, I'll read Waiting for the Parade. I still smell the garbage on 10th Street. Rotten bananas mixed with baby shit, spoiled milk, marijuana, mildew, Daily News covered in piss, yellowing in the fading sun, headline, Ford to New York, drop dead. It was the third year of the Halloween parade, an unseasonably cool night, the winding crowd overwhelming the lingering stink. Mermaids, angels, scantily clad superheroes danced between skeletons and puppets, spirits and flasks warming bare shoulders. One guy dressed as a linoleum floor, his partner as a mop and bucket. I don't know if they survived the new pandemic lurking in shadows. Sudden, unexplainable losses, strange blemishes on beautiful faces. Just like now, except it's dry coughs, fevers, tight chests, and fear, and it's Trump to New York, drop dead. And it's almost the Easter parade, it's almost Passover, and it's almost tax deadlines, and school breaks, and Ramadan. But we will not gather together this April. Tonight, we dance alone in our kitchens. Some of our friends have lost their sense of smell, their sense of taste. Some of our friends have lost the war. We are grieving and we cannot touch. In 1975, banana peels and Pampers littered the 10th Street pavement. Today, the streets are empty. The highways are quiet. I still smell the rotten bananas and the shit-filled diapers, the piss, the wine, the cigarette butts. Behind masks and gloves, we wait for our parade to begin. Okay, and I'm going to end with this one. It's called Bunkers. Bunkers. I moved through the country from my bunker to yours. Nothing to do but get drunk, fuck, and write poems. We stumble through the desert half naked, clothing shredded, bodies torn and bleeding. Burn the boundaries, tear down the gates, trash the safe words. We talk in screams of pain and ecstasy. No difference anymore between the two. Fuck me hard and hit me harder. Make me know I'm alive. Don't ask. Just take what is left. Everything we want is here, and all that we need is more. We never know the time. The moon shines. The sun rises. The light fades. We live in cooler. The mountains melt. Somewhere pavements crumble, and everything is perfect. And that's the end.
Beautiful.
And that's raw and it's truth, you know, and that's the beauty of art. You know, art could be subjective, but you see whatever you want, and that's really, it just wraps up everything that's going on, you know, from anybody's vision, I think. I think anybody could see, you know, their own persona in that. And
love,
thank you so
you know,
much, Puma.
Yeah.
Puma, go ahead, Alita. I didn't mean to cut you
no,
off.
No, I just love, you know, people putting their feelings into words. I always admire
that,
yeah. You know.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Thank
is what,
you. Thanks for having me
what,
on.
Absolutely. And I want to wish you, are you doing a virtual Seder or anything tonight? I want to wish you a happy Passover.
Oh,
what
no,
are you doing?
I'm not, but happy Passover every day.
Happy Passover, Puma.
Yeah, to you. Health.
I wish I were, but I'm not.
No.
Well, the best
all right,
I think
well,
we
take
could
care
wish anybody.
And I'll
absolutely.
See you guys on the other
health
side.
Health to you and your family. Absolutely, darling.
Thank you.
Health
you
to
again.
You and your family, darling.
Bye.
Thank you, Puma Pearl. Thank
bye
you, darling.
Bye.
Puma Pearl. You know, the voice of her community. And just, you know, I have a couple of her books. And she's just wonderful and raw and honest. And that's
Definitely.
That's odd. You know, that's really odd.
Definitely.
And I think that's the best thing. And, you know, it's crazy because, you know, again, she's spoken word. And, you know, I've had her at a couple of venues of ours and I've seen her work. And spoken word, I always say, I think she's always going to translate okay. If she even did Zoom, spoken word translates well. I worry about the strings. I worry about the brass. I worry about the drums. I worry about, you know, it's just how is it going to translate on Zoom? That's what I worry about. You know,
well,
that's
right.
The thing.
It's totally different.
The writers that could get to a column and just use the energy, because this is just, it's unique. We're never going to be, hopefully, we'll never be here again. And use the time to compose whatever your artistic flair is, writing, composing music, in your case, photography. I mean, the lighter side, you and I, is something that we designed, the lighter side, and just beautiful pictures of nature. In a dark society,
then every other day that you do the lighter side, I put up my own, like, you know, positive spin on this, you know, because, like I said, I've seen too many people that are posting these negative thoughts. I mean, I watch the news. I know the numbers. I know the deaths. You are not the news. I don't need to hear it from you also. It's enough. Let's put some positivity out there.
And I'll go to say, I don't want to be Pollyanna. I don't want to be an ostrich hiding my head in the sand. I know what's going on. But the thing is, as always in life, there's a yin and a yang. So let's look. We have this. So let's show that. It's always a 50-50 split. You know, if we're going to see the horrible things that are happening, and they have always happened historically, let's show the lighter side and the beauty that's still around us, the cherry blossoms that we're going to lose next week because they're only around 2 weeks. Let's look at that and applaud that. I mean, that's what we have to do.
I totally agree.
You know? So,
so
I mean,
we have,
I think that's,
we have,
is Pamela?
Yes, we have Pamela on. I'm going to bring her on.
Her on because I want to give her a little applause. Is she
welcome.
On?
Welcome.
Pamela,
welcome.
Hi, how are you, Lori? I'm giving you an applause because she deserves it. She deserves an applause. Let me tell you something.
She works hard every day. I see her.
This is a girl from Brooklyn saying this. This is a woman who tirelessly is, you know, on the air every day, live streaming, and just keeping the brave face, talking about the good things and doing such an amazing service to her community by restaurants that are open, where you could get this, where you could get that. Now, Leet and I do this show for an hour and a half every week, and I can tell you there's a lot involved in just one show a week.
Research, a lot of, you know, remembering stuff. I totally get it.
This woman, and you watch her, she's looking at this, she's looking at that, she's looking at this in her kitchen, with things
and I like
going
your kitchen,
the
by
background.
The way, Pam.
Oh,
you have a very
nice
kitchen.
Thank you. You're very sweet. You're very sweet. Thank you for tuning in and being so supportive. That's lovely.
Of course. Of course. And, you know, this is where people remember you. You know, it's not, it's my favorite quote by Maya Angelou, it's not, people don't remember how you treat, they remember how you feel. You made them feel, and you make people feel safe. You make people feel there's a sense of community. You make people feel there's a resource, and that's just amazing. That really is.
You're so, so sweet. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You know, I come from the restaurant business. You know, I grew up in it. I have a passion for it. You know, my Uncle Jim had a restaurant called Jim McMullen's, which was on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. And my mother became the bookkeeper there. You know, I literally grew up in it since I was like 7 or 8 years old. That's when he started the restaurant in the 70s. So, you know, and then I eventually was in the restaurant business myself. My husband and I owned a food service company that serviced the schools in the region.
And then I went to we owned a restaurant on Staten Island and on Forest Avenue. And then basically from there, I started working at the Staten Island Dance, where I'm the food editor. And that's it. That's my beat, is Staten Island.
Yeah.
And you know, I watch it. But, you know, again, Elite lives in Staten Island. I don't, but I've had businesses out there. And every day when she's reading the restaurants, I know exactly who she's talking about. I know Peter.
Yeah.
We know Mario. We know,
yeah,
you know,
every
we know Max's.
Yeah.
We know, you know, Ian over at Cold's. I mean, we know everybody.
Right.
And what's interesting is, and I'm watching this, and I've been watching every week, and like with, and I don't want to label this a tragedy, because that might be just me not getting the right wording, but you know, in any type of event like this, there's the search and recover, and the search is like very optimistic, and then I noticed, you know, as things start closing, and I think yesterday or the day before you used the word 86. So you didn't have to use the word close. And I said, that's brilliant, because nobody wants to hear close. So you use the word 86, and it softens what we already know.
Right.
So I think that was smart.
Oh, well, thanks. And, yeah, you know, it's funny that word close is such an awful word on so many levels. And I choose the word, like, it goes dark, or, you know, and then actually a friend of mine who's in the banking business, apparently there's certain wording that you have to put on the sign in order to express things that don't cause a panic. So, you know, you can't use the word close, I think. I think that's a big trigger word. But, you know, it's interesting, you know, you mentioned Peter, which is Peter Boutros, who has three restaurants now.
Yeah.
And he and Ian Cole and Larry Cole, who own Cole's Dockside and Great Kills, you know, they it's very interesting how they adapted to, you know, this new format of just pick up and to go. I mean, you know, there's obviously no having the people in dining rooms and bars and whatnot, but they were, you know, they have a loyal following. And Peter, you know, eventually closed up. He shut down. I think it was on April 1st.
Yeah.
But, and it's tough. It's hard not to be at work and doing your livelihood. I know. But, you know, Ian is keeping it up. I mean, they're in the restaurant, and they're serving customers, and it's a little scary, I think, for people who are still in business and still keeping the doors open, because they're a lot of them are scared they're going to get sick.
See, that's the thing. I mean, when you're a restaurant, I mean, I guess before this was, we're trying to figure out how the arts could translate, you know, with when you have live venues, you could do Zoom, you could do live streams of music, of whatever spoken word. But with restaurants, the only thing you really have is curbside and delivery. You know, that's really all you have. I mean, how do you think these people can reinvent themselves after this is all going to be over? And it will be.
Yeah, that's an excellent question, and I struggle with that every day. I think what's going to happen is that when we do come back from this, you're going to see, like, a lot of changes, first of all. I don't think you'll ever go into a supermarket ever again. I mean, when you talk about the retail end of it, you know, you will never see a place that doesn't have hand, you know, sanitizing places.
Yeah, I think so,
But with restaurants, I think, you know, you're going to see more hygiene-centered things. I would imagine any kind of open-air space, like malls, like the Staten Island Mall. I mean, I think it would be in their best interest, you know, or see places like that to, you know, have hand-washing sinks in public areas or where there's, like, multiple restaurants. It's not a novel idea. They do this apparently in Singapore, and apparently they manage to contain the virus quite a bit by just, you know, doing something as simple as washing hands and making those things available to people. But, you know, you're going to see people come out of this and try to, the restaurant owners try to ensure patrons that, you know, they're safe, that their food is well handled, that maybe the table spaces will be larger between tables. You're not going to see people packed into restaurants. You know, a lot of this too is that, you know, they're getting a handle on to go. You know, they're doing it well, and you know they're learning how to do things like pack up cocktails. I mean, that is not easy. And you know, for to go,
You know, I was going to ask you that. Isn't it against the law to pack up cocktails?
It's a good question. About 3 weeks ago, and forgive me here, I've lost track of time. The mandate was made that, you know, obviously we have to do the non-dining room thing. And so as a result, the liquor authority, state liquor authority, kind of reshuffled a little bit and made it so that the restaurants could do curbside pickup and to-go of booze. If they already had a valid liquor license, all they have to do is if they deliver it, they have to keep the liquor license in the car. And,
Okay.
Oh, that makes sense. Perfect.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And they have to seal the container so that there's no temptation for the person to sip it, you know, in transit.
I see.
But, and that's another thing is that under normal circumstances, you could take a bottle of wine from a restaurant, you know, or you could, if you didn't finish a bottle of wine, the restaurant owner in some cases has the capability of sealing it so that it, you know, can't be opened, you know, until it gets to its destination. But going forward, you know, the restaurants are very, the people on Staten Island, people in New York City are very resilient. And again, they're going to learn from this. And when ultimately, you know, things had to have changed anyway, because with the minimum wage being as high as it is, with expenses being what they are, this was an unfortunate Darwinian way of making people learn immediately how to scale back and change a concept on a dime. And that's what they did, you know. And I think that the biggest challenge, too, and I really admire one restaurant, Blue, which is on the water.
Yes.
I just passed it the other day.
Just
a charming restaurant. You know, like the allure of the restaurant is actually sitting down in the dining room. With the owner of the place, Julian, is he made a whole, like, completely different menu. What they did, what the restaurants did, is they realized that people were not able to get to supermarkets, or they were afraid of the supermarkets or delis. So they created menus like Julian did. Like, Julian has a whole section of cold cuts. So you can order your cold cuts from the restaurant and not have to go there. You know,
Is that interesting?
That is really interesting.
That, and there was another place, South Shore in Tottenville, Reggiano's, they sell toilet paper and, you know, all sorts of paper goods and things like that. So they sell pizza still, and they do Italian food. So, you know, you can get containers of milk. Yeah, the day that you put the order in the day before. So the supermarket says they get overwhelmed. You know, that you can't place an order with ShopRite, for instance, or whatever other markets. A lot of larger markets, you can't place the order for like a week or two. And so this is a way of filling in. And the other restaurant that did it very well is Venom, which is in Stapleton. It's a Michelin-rated restaurant, Michelin-acknowledged restaurant, with something called Bib Gourmand. And this guy is a convenience to the customers, does curbside pickup of toilet paper, and can you imagine a Michelin-rated place?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
just
amazing.
Have to think on your feet. I mean, seriously,
you really
have to just... Yeah. And I'm not minimizing anybody that can't do that, but, I mean, you really have to be a step ahead of the pulse, because, you know, this is just... Nobody ever expected this. So a lot of people were not equipped with the tools that can deal with this. But, yeah, you just do anything you can. And, you know, Emily, you were saying when I was writing in yesterday, you were asking me about the restaurants in Brooklyn. Now, I always dine in Bay Ridge, and Bay Ridge is like Restaurant Row. You have three avenues full of, I always say, if you can't find a place to eat in Bay Ridge, you don't want to eat, because everything is there. And it's pretty much the same as Staten Island. It's just like, you know, if people are not closed entirely, it's just delivery, and it's a day-by-day thing. I mean, something is open one day, and it's closed the next.
Mm-hmm.
So it's everywhere.
I mean, trying to keep track of things. I have a list, you know, that a couple of my colleagues and I worked on at the newspaper. It's like a pendulum every day. It's like changes. Restaurants close, they open. There was one restaurant, a lot of the Chinese restaurants on Staten Island closed. A lot of the Asian-owned restaurants closed.
Because of the, you know, they were getting racist remarks and stuff like that.
It's terrible. Yeah,
but
yeah,
Oriental Plaza is open. I have to tell you that, because we order from there a lot.
Oh, are they?
Yeah,
that's a nice place. That's a nice place.
But Jade Island,
our
favorite, closed up for this pandemic.
Oh.
The only other places, and I learned actually yesterday afternoon that Tokyo Sushi is open. That's in Castleton Corners. Jade Asian Bistro reopened after being closed for about a week.
Good.
You know, they couldn't get any supplies. The Asian-owned suppliers, they just stopped working, and the drivers were terrified, so they just, you know, stopped servicing the industry. And so she got up on Monday morning and went shopping in Brooklyn, picked up her chef, came to the restaurant you know, on Monday.
God bless.
And they have like limited menu. Yeah, they're doing it.
You got to do it on your own.
I love that.
You got to do it on
that.
Your own. If you want to succeed, you got to do it on your own.
Exactly. And I just want to mention also that there's a place on New Dorf Lane. New Dorf Lane is a very interesting spot right now because it has the potential of being a Chinatown, you know, and developing into the avenue. And, you know, in that mix, you have restaurants that are like, you know, Italian restaurants and pizzerias and things like that. And a lot of places that rely on.
Restaurants.
Yeah.
A lot of Asian restaurants.
the whole model of New Dorf Lane is pedestrian traffic that comes from New Dorf High School and, you know, the other schools in the neighborhood, the train station. You know, like this is like a very well trafficked area. There is no traffic right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, but in all of this, still Jade Asian Bistro reopened. There's another place called Sips and Maker. It's a gourmet coffee shop that has really nice pastries and things like that. Very, very nice place. And she's reopening on Friday.
Good. Thank God.
You know, it has her 30-year anniversary. She wants to continue. You know, everybody wants to get back to normal.
What
is
about
a bridal lane?
Right. I was going to say that, Alit. You always told me it was like a wedding.
It was bridal
like
lane
wedding
years ago. That's where I bought my wedding dress years ago. Yeah. It's changed.
Wow,
yeah.
A lot, dramatically. But I just want to mention one more thing, too. Today in the Staten Island Advance, there was a story about the ice cream man. And, you know,
I'm hearing them.
Yes. Isn't that where do you live, in Bullshead?
No, I live in Heartland Village. And I heard them yesterday all day. And I'm saying to my husband, I said, why is the ice cream man around now? This is not a time to get ice cream, especially waiting online with the people.
You and about every other person on Staten Island, maybe except for a handful, felt the same way. And I got tons of emails from readers who were in New Dorp or Woodrow, wherever they were, all over Staten Island. You're right. And so I contacted the guy who had a couple of the routes, and I called the Parks Department, too, to see what was going on, you know, if that was okay, like, what's the deal? And the owner of four of the trucks, his name is Richie Holmes, he also owns Juicy Lucy and Ocean Breeze, he said he wanted people to get back to normal, basically, and he thought it was almost a service to the community. So even though the drivers were freaked out, you know, and weren't, you know, doing their normal sales, which is, you know, waiting outside of a school or, you know, going outside of a place where people congregate, like the beach, like Ocean Breeze fishing here, and the track field down on Father Capodanno. He, he did, you know, he has the, he got put the bells on, you know, had the drivers go through the neighborhoods with wearing masks and, you know, went through a whole step-by-step on how to handle the money with the gloves. You know, after every customer, he throws the gloves away, the driver. And, but in the meantime, I had people sending in pictures of, you know, like one picture that I ended up using as the lead picture on SI Live. It was just so telling. I mean, it was like mind-blowing to see their kids, two, a boy and a girl, sitting on the roof of or the hood of the their family's minivan in Arden Heights, and they're looking, you know, like, you know, at the ice cream man, like, aw, you know.
Oh, they wanted ice cream.
But, you know, okay.
I'm
going to be the devil's advocate here. Now, assuming they are following all the protocols and they're being safe and they're doing everything they need to do with social distancing, what's wrong with hearing that and having hope? That's what I have to say. I mean, there's just something about giving people, they're being safe. And if you're saying they're using the gloves and not transferring the money from one hand, what's wrong with giving people hope? We really have very little, but the little things. So I know Elite's probably making faces at the phone, but what's wrong with giving people hope?
I understand what you're saying. I do understand what you're saying. But, you know, the ice cream man is doing the protocol. But how about the people outside the truck? Are they doing it? Is he going to like, guide them and say stand 6 feet apart? He's helping
people.
There's only one person. Behind the truck.
But
now,
wait a second. If the parents are with the kids,
I'm hoping the parents are being responsible.
Usually
they're not. But I'm just saying, it's I mean, I understand trying to get back to normalcy, but we're not there yet. So why put anybody in danger at the moment? That's the only thing I'm saying.
But see, the thing is, if I don't know that they're putting people – look, if people are going to be reckless, they're going to be reckless in going to the store. They're going to be irresponsible
in
whatever they're doing.
I've seen them in the parks. There's tons and tons of people.
Understand. Pamela, break this up. What do you think?
And
I put her on the spot.
You know, I like hearing you guys bicker. I mean, that's kind of interesting to hear the back and forth. I think,
this is our show. Yes.
I love it.
This is our show.
Ultimately, you know, it's a weird time. I think hope is all we have. And, if a restaurant owner or somebody who has a food business is, you know, following the rules and going,
whatever the governor is saying.
I think, you know, give it a shot. Hey, you know, if the people don't come, they don't come. But,
true.
And I'll give you a perfect example. I'm not just of the ice cream man, like Danny Mills, Rennie and Dean in St. George. This guy is absolutely not set up for it to go. And, he is, really kind of okay on social media. But, at this game, you have to really work the phones and, put it out there on Instagram and Facebook and whatever you can do to get people to come to you or you to come to them. And he, he's on the road. Now, the owner of the business is physically in his truck delivering to people, and doing the best he can. And I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I think it's his glimmer of hope is that people are going to buy his steaks that aren't cooked. He doesn't do that on their own, on the grill. It's his hope that maybe he'll win over a customer when things come back to normal and maybe he's made a new friend, But that's also the thing about, hope and being positive and looking toward the end of this, how we're going to get out of this and the laws that will come out of this, the issues of catering deposits. There's a whole line of things, the thinking that you would never even consider in the food business, distribution, supply, demand, things like the Hunts Point Market. Up there is where the produce is, a major source of produce for New York City.
In the
Bronx, there was a chance that there was rumors that they were going to close it because they work in such proximity to each other, and oh my gosh, that's like horrible. But then what happened was they kept it open, all the restaurants went out, and supply and demand shifted. And also the supermarkets were starting to, rely on some of the vendors there. So it's cutting out the middleman. So you're getting these massive, places like, a Wakefern or something, some big entity coming in, buying massive quantities of produce, and there's nothing left in the market for the smaller market. So it's like all this stuff that you never thought of. The Fulton Fish Market, that's another place. The Fulton Fish Market, they had to lay off a lot of people. It's Lent. You have fish. You have fish from Portugal that's like sardines and things like that that people use in pasta con sarde, which is a traditional dish during Lent, St. Joseph's Day.
Yeah,
St.
Joseph's.
Branzino comes from Greece for the most part. Spain. It's a huge, people love that stuff and you don't have it. To think positively, everything swings back to, how are we going to make this work as Americans? How are we going to make this work? Well, we're going to do more fishing and we're going to relax some regulations in the United States. And, maybe that's what's going to come of this. You're going to see more local fishermen or you're going to be able to see sportsmen be able to sell their fish directly to, a restaurant legally. Maybe those things will happen with supply and demand.
It's going to be tough.
And, the truth is, and we've done this historically, we're going to make a number of mistakes until we hit the right thing. And that's just the way it is because this is not an exact science. I think that anybody who's even a brilliant marketeer would not say, okay, this is definitely going to work. It's like throwing spaghetti against the wall. Something is going to stick and something won't. And the hard part is in getting to where we need to get, people are going to get hurt. People are still going to be out of work and businesses will dissolve. Unfortunately, that's the case. but hopefully that we can pick up the fumble quickly so that the, you know, it's not as weighty in gravity as it could be.
So. I am concerned, and my biggest fear, and the thing that gives me, like, you know, nightmares, is thinking of how we went into this. You know, you had tenuous situations with restaurants that were really struggling with the minimum wage increases,
mm-hmm.
really struggling with rents and things like that going into this.
Yeah.
You know, landlords' expenses went up too. I mean, that's, you know, the whole
mm-hmm.
you know, progression of things. But I don't think we were really solid going into this whole recession here. And so immediately off the bat, you're going to get the unhealthy businesses not coming back. And you're having an enormous number of people who need jobs, you know, and have no place to go. And then everybody's, where are they going to go? They could gravitate to a city job? I mean, you couldn't get them. They were few and far between to begin with, you
mm-hmm.
know, a year ago.
Amen.
Like,
6 months
ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So true.
So, yeah.
The best we could do is the best we could do. And in saying that, I'm going to say goodbye to Pamela Silvestri, who is just doing. She is, I've been calling her the LaGuardia of Staten Island. He was the one who, you know, during the Depression was reading the funnies just to make people feel better. And he was on every Sunday, and he was on for about an hour and a half. And this is what you do. You provide a service, and I wrote on your wall today, is I think Staten Island's greatest natural resource, because she's up there, and she's been there for the past few weeks. And let me tell you something. I watch, and it's not easy. It's not easy reporting what you have to report and trying to be optimistic. So hats off to you, darling.
Yes.
Thank you. Very kind. I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Keep
it up. Please. I appreciate it very much.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful day. And happy Easter to you, sweetheart. Happy Easter.
Thank you.
Happy
very
Easter.
Much. Happy Easter.
Staten Island Advance. Thank you, darling. Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
You too, darling. And let me tell you something. I don't know if you – the only day I didn't watch early was Monday when I had to take my mother-in-law to the bank. I think that was the only day I missed her. And it's, let me tell you something, not a job I would want, because you try and be optimistic.
Listen,
and then,
I
again,
watch it, you know, later on, and it's just, it's a lot of research. It's a lot of, you know, knowing what's happening.
And again, having to, again, the early part in events, it's the search phase, and then you got to go to the recovery phase. And that's a very different thing. The search is like you're finding the people that are alive. The recovery is you're recovering the body, and that's what the hardest thing is. So I was smiling to myself the other day when she changed to 86. She didn't want to say closing anymore. She changed to 86, which, you know, I think is humane. So we thank her for joining us, Pamela Silvestri, Staten Island Advance. Listen to her every day. She's live for about, I'd say about five minutes, 10 minutes. She's on the air. My lovely co-host, Elite Ziegelman, who makes this a whole lot easier. And believe me, we're doing this remote. I got love birds behind my head. I can't see this woman that's co-hosting with me. And all we have is each other and knowing we've been on the air for 8 years and we know each other's rhythm. So thank you to you, my darling. And that's our show
you.
For this week. And I wish everybody, including my lovely, a happy Passover. It's
thank
a little
you.
Early, but I will be
listen,
back to
tonight.
Wish.
Right.
It's tonight. I'll be back to wish you a happy when sundown occurs.
Okay.
But everybody, be safe. Happy Easter to those who are celebrating. And let's just keep our heads above water. Puma Pearl, thank you, darling. Thank you for joining us and sharing your art with us. Elite, I love you. Let Anina take us home.
Take care,
see you
everybody.
Next week, people.
Bye-bye.